They want Kim Jong-un to understand that they have the capability to strike North Korea at any moment they wish and in any format they wish.
A U.S. B-1 bomber took part in a U.S.-Korean military exercise to send a signal to the North. This is Thursday, December 7th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington, D.C. You are part of this program. Join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, as more and more horror stories are aired about what has and is happening to Rohingya refugees, U.S. politicians talk about possible new sanctions. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A U.S. B-1 bomber Wednesday joined a large-scale U.S.-South Korean military exercise that North Korea has denounced as pushing the peninsula to the brink of nuclear war as tension mounts between the North and the United States. The bomber flew from the Pacific U.S.-administered territory of Guam and joined U.S. F-22 and F-35 stealth fighters in the annual exercises, which run until Friday. These drills come a week after North Korea said it had tested its most advanced intercontinental ballistic missile, capable of reaching the United States as part of a weapons program that it has conducted in defiance of international sanctions and condemnation. The inclusion of this bomber in the U.S. military exercises comes on the same day U.N. Undersecretary General for Political Affairs Jeffrey Feltman, a former senior U.S. diplomat, met in Pyongyang with North Korean Vice Foreign Minister Park Myung-guk on what the state media said involved bilateral cooperation and other issues of mutual interest. It was on the second day of his visit, the first by a high-ranking U.N. official since leader Kim Jong-un came to power in 2011. He's also expected to meet the foreign minister, Ri Yong-ho. The Feltman visit has raised hopes for United Nations mediation to ease global tensions over the North's nuclear and missile programs. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert said Feltman was not carrying any U.S. communication.
He's not traveling on behalf of the U.S. government, and he's not traveling, I want to make this clear, with any kind of message from the U.S. government.
She said Washington is open if Pyongyang was serious about giving up its nuclear weapons. However, recent activities show they are not interested, she said. Meanwhile, South Korean President Moon Jae-in will travel to Beijing next week for talks with his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping. Now, the inclusion of the bomber that flew over South Korea from its base in Guam was an apparent show of force following last week's latest North Korean missile test. Joint U.S.-South Korean air exercises this week are scheduled to conclude in 2 days. Harry Kazianis is director of defense studies at the Washington-based Center for the National Interest. He told VOA's Victor Beatty the military exercises are intended to send a clear message to Pyongyang.
They want Kim Jong-un to understand that they have the capability to strike North Korea at any moment they wish and in any format they wish. Now, I don't think the Trump administration, at least at the moment, is thinking about using its military capabilities to hit North Korea's nuclear or missile programs. But they want to make sure and send the message to the North Korean regime that all options are on the table, like they've been saying over and over again. And they want this to be crystal clear to Kim. And they want to demonstrate to him that if he ever thought about using military force against either South Korea or Japan or the U.S. homeland, that we would be able to respond with devastating force. That's why we do these drills, and I think that's why we're trying to send this message to Kim.
Of course, Russia and China have been pushing this so-called dual suspension proposal, which would mean that the North Koreans suspend their nuclear and missile testing. The U.S. and South Korea would suspend their joint exercises. Is that a viable possibility?
A few months ago, I would have said no, because the North Koreans get to pocket all of the nuclear and missile advances that they have undertaken in the last decade or so. However, I have been shocked at the speed of which this crisis has really brewed over the last few months. So at present, I wouldn't be completely against a freeze-for-freeze proposal, but I think the United States and in North Korea would need to negotiate very, very quickly to see if that's even viable. The North Koreans are notorious for offering one set of proposals, and then when you sit down at the negotiation table with them, trying to get something completely different. So I think we're exploring it with the North Koreans, But I have a feeling the North Koreans have bigger aspirations in mind. I think what they're really looking for is probably sanctions relief. The sanctions are biting them very substantially right now.
This reported B-1B Lancer bomber overflight is coming as the most senior UN official, Jeffrey Feltman, the Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, is visiting North Korea. There's a lot of speculation about what his intent is. Would the UN possibly be a good mediation point to ease tensions on the peninsula?
I think they would absolutely be a fabulous way to open channels. I mean, even if it's just the North Koreans sort of communicating through the UN to the United States, to Seoul, to Japan, what its intentions are. Because the next few weeks, I think, are very, very key here. We have to remember the North Koreans over the summer and into the fall have been testing missiles at a very, very fast pace. And what's interesting is when they deploy a new missile system, they've been testing it twice. So we have to expect the North Koreans are going to test the Hwasong-15 again. And if I had to put a date on it, I'd mark your calendar for December 17th. That's the date in the anniversary of Kim Jong-il's death, and I think that's very likely when you could see another ICBM test.
Meanwhile, the state-run Jilin Daily in China's northeast city of Jilin near North Korea's border published the full front page Wednesday of advice, including illustrations on how readers can protect themselves in the event of a nuclear weapons attack. The Global Times called it part of national defense education and acknowledged the article sparked heated discussions on Chinese social media sites amid tensions on the Korean Peninsula. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. A UN envoy discusses sanctions while visiting North Korea. Dengue vaccine sparks fears in the Philippines. The U.S. restricts visas for Cambodians, undermining democracy. The U.S. restricts visas for Cambodians. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. The International Organization for Migration reports that hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees who have fled to Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh since late August to escape persecution and violence in Myanmar are living in dire conditions in squalid makeshift settlements. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the IOM headquarters in Geneva.
More than 100 days have passed since an upsurge in violence in Myanmar's northern Rakhine state forced nearly 626,000 Rohingya to flee for safety to Bangladesh. The International Organization for Migration reports this refugee population is crammed into congested, unhygienic settlements, which are susceptible to outbreak of diseases. While conditions for the Rohingya are dreadful, IOM spokesman Joel Millman says this huge refugee influx into Cox's Bazar is having a severe impact on the impoverished host communities in the region.
The water, sanitation, and hygiene situation is not only of concern in the refugee settlements, where over 60% of water was contaminated with E. coli, but also in the local communities living nearby.
Millman says local people in Cox's Bazar are struggling to survive. To alleviate the situation, he says the United Nations plans to include some 300,000 Bangladeshis as part of its humanitarian assistance program for Rohingya refugees. He says IOM, which is part of the UN plan, already has constructed more than 3,800 latrines and 159 wells in six host community locations.
More than 30,000 host community members now have access to safe water and sanitation services, and IOM has trained and equipped local tube well caretakers as well.
Milman says health teams in Cox's Bazar are providing emergency and primary health care services to both the Rohingya and local Bangladeshi communities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Here in the United States, the House of Representatives is scheduled to vote on a resolution this week condemning the ethnic cleansing of the Rohingya. VOA's congressional reporter Catherine Gibson has more on the U.S. Congress's efforts to stop the crisis, including a tough sanctions bill cracking down on the Burmese military responsible for the violence.
Thousands displaced, raped, and murdered. Suffering described with one word by a U.S. lawmaker.
The word is genocide.
Encompassing a tragedy of enormous scope, as described by the head of the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
600,000 Rohingya people driven from their homes in recent months, forced to cross the border into Bangladesh. Hundreds have been killed. At least 200 villages have been burned to the ground. Landmines have been placed inside Burma's border with Bangladesh, maiming refugees who are seeking safe haven. There are reports of rapes and all types of violence committed against the Rohingya.
A tragedy with an impact that reaches around the world.
This is a moral issue and a national security issue. No one is secure when extremism and instability is growing in this part of the world.
Efforts to address the crisis have strong bipartisan support. But Trump administration policies hindered efforts to help the estimated 600,000 refugees, said the head House Foreign Affairs Democrat.
This is more than 10 times the number of refugees the administration will allow into the United States this year. The same administration that ended America's participation in the UN effort to develop a global compact on migration. All this right in the middle of the world's most serious refugee crisis in history. So I say, shame on us, we should be doing more.
That next step, bills pending in the House and Senate that would impose harsh economic penalties on the Burmese military.
The United States certainly cannot solve every problem in the world, but there are some things that we can and that we must do. And imposing sanctions against the perpetrators of atrocities in Burma is one of the things that we must do.
And provide aid to refugees.
And the goal here is to get those that have been displaced and in general have gone to Bangladesh to allow them to return to Burma, return to their homes. Although a lot of those homes have been burned to the ground by the military. So there's an awful lot of economic development that's going to be necessary.
And while Congress is aware that help is urgently required,
there's so much need here, and this isn't something you can afford to wait a long period of time for.
With just a handful of working days left in 2017 and leadership occupied with working out a deal to fund the government, lawmakers likely won't vote on that bill until next year. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Happening now in Asia, the U.S. flies a B-1B bomber over southern South Korea in a show of force against North Korea. Russian strategic bombers visit Indonesia in a military show. Senior U.N. officials meet North Korea's deputy foreign minister. And China dominates the top Western economies in patent applications. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. The Trump administration announced Wednesday it will restrict visas for Cambodians who are what the State Department says are undermining democracy in the Southeast Asian nation following the dissolution of the main opposition party and a crackdown on independent media. The State Department said it was a direct response to anti-democratic actions by the Cambodian government, but did not disclose which individuals would be affected. Spokeswoman Heather Nauert called on the Cambodian government to reinstate the opposition Cambodian National Rescue Party, which was dissolved by a Supreme Court order last month, and free its leader, Kem Sokha, in prison since September. She also urged Cambodia to allow civil society and media to operate freely. Prime Minister Hun Sen, who has held power for more than three decades, has sought to neutralize political opponents and silence critics ahead of national elections next year. Kem Sokha has been charged with trying to topple the government with U.S. support, which Washington has said is a baseless accusation. Nauert said Cambodia's actions run counter to the Paris peace agreements of 1991. The United States and 18 other governments signed the accords, which ushered in democracy after the genocidal rule of the Khmer Rouge regime in the late 1970s, that went then occupation by Vietnam and civil war. In a statement, Nauert said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will restrict entry into the United States of those individuals involved in undermining democracy in Cambodia, adding that in certain circumstances, family members of those individuals will also be subject to visa restrictions. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Philippines has suspended the sale and distribution of Sanofi's dengue vaccine after the French pharmaceutical giant last week warned it could worsen symptoms for people who had not previously been infected. Regulators Friday froze the country's world-first public dengue immunization program that has seen more than 733,000 children receive the Dengvaxia vaccine. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. Global patent filings hit record highs last year, with China leading the charge, receiving more patent applications than the United States, Japan, South Korea, and the European Union combined. The United Nations World Intellectual Property Organization chief Francis Gurry told reporters in Geneva that some 3.1 million patent applications were filed worldwide last year, rising for the seventh straight year and marking an 8.3% hike from 2015. Gurry said that worldwide number, China received about 236,600 of the nearly 240,500 additional patent filings, accounting for a full 98% of the growth.
The first thing that stands out and hits one in the face is the extraordinary growth numbers, because you compare that to the growth in the world economy, and it is a very different picture.
Gurry said China is increasingly amongst the leaders in global innovation and branding. Overall, China's state intellectual property office received a record total of 1.3 million patent applications last year. In second place, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office trailed far behind at 605,500, followed by Japan with just over 318,000. Gurry said, "This is just a reflection, I think, of the stage of growth of the Chinese economy and its orientation," telling the French news agency that he expected the numbers of Chinese foreign filings to explode going forward and continue to push up global patent applications. This news alert from VOA Asia. A new report from UNICEF finds that some 300 million children, nearly one in seven on the planet, are living in parts of the world where levels of outdoor pollution are at their most toxic, mostly in South Asia. The report, Clear the Air for Children, used satellite imagery of outdoor air pollution to conclude that 300 million children were living in areas where levels exceeded international guidelines by at least six times. Now on VOA Asia, Starbucks is a giant in the global coffee market and is getting even bigger with the world's largest Starbucks store, which opened this week in Shanghai. VOA's Faith Lapidus has the story.
It was an event to rival the opening of a Hollywood blockbuster, Starbucks' second reserve roastery and the first to open internationally.
The future growth, the real growth, the engine of growth for Starbucks is going to be in China.
Starbucks is already a dominant force in China. With more than 3,000 stores, it commanded more than half of the specialist coffee shop market last year. At the opening of the new flagship store, company executives told reporters they expect to have 10,000 outlets within a decade.
The Chinese customers are embracing Starbucks, embracing coffee, embracing the teas that we offer.
Shanghai has some 6,500 coffee houses. The customers have high expectations for the new roaster.
This place looks more high-end, much closer to the original coffee roasting and brewing methods, and should be better.
I think the roastery can, for example, teach people how to make coffee, choose your preferred coffee beans, and control the degree of roasting, as there are various types of roasts, such as dark roast and others.
Cup by cup, Starbucks hopes to spread coffee culture in China. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Australia's parliament might legalize gay marriage this week, despite some lawmakers' concerns about whether Australian cake makers should have to cater for same-sex weddings. That according to a leading opponent of marriage equality. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments Tuesday over whether a baker here who refused to provide a wedding cake for a gay couple was exercising artistic freedom and was exempt from Colorado anti-discrimination laws. Drafting such measures into the Australian bill would delay it, but several gay marriage opponents have told Parliament this week they would not stand in the way of marriage equality because the Australian public clearly supported it in a recent postal ballot. The holiday season is in full swing, with Thanksgiving in the rearview mirror. Festive Americans turn their sights to the December holidays. Lights decorate houses, trees fill living rooms, and candles burn in windowsills. VOA's Arabasadi spent an evening on the Potomac River as part of a decades-old holiday tradition in suburban Northern Virginia.
"'Twas just weeks before Christmas, and all around the dock, folks lit up their boats so families would flock. From a one-time affair of boats sailing at night on the Potomac, an annual event was born called the Parade of Lights. Nearly 20 years have passed since the inaugural run. Boaters came and went. There were even years when December's weather was unforgiving.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
But on this magical evening recently, the sunset was clear and the temperature above freezing.
Boaters love a party. Boaters love to dress up, they love to be nautical, they love to celebrate Christmas.
Hundreds watch the pageantry from the docks and nearby restaurants.
That's one of the reasons why we do this. It's the same reason why we put lights outside of our homes to share in the season.
It's something you can come down to free. You can stand on the side of, you know, on the shoreline and have this spectacular parade of boats go by, not have to pay a cent for it. And it'll actually be something the kids will remember for a long, long time.
Boater Keith Harmon says he watched the parade for decades, and this was the first year he had a boat big enough to join.
It's a time to have a lot of fun, to celebrate the season, to show the Christmas spirit, and to celebrate life, and you know, coming out to kind of show off a little, but entertain everybody as well.
But started as a Christmas celebration changed with the times.
Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. And so from us here in the United States to people around the world, we appreciate you. And this is a season where we should all come together and enjoy and celebrate the season.
No worries if you missed it this time. The Old Dominion Boat Club is the parade's annual starting point on the first Saturday in December every year. Season's greetings. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, somewhere along the Potomac River.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. We'd like to hear from you as well at VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Dave Magnus, our managing editor, Diane Gal, and our entire VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.